You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello, and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I'm your host, Michael Kushner, and I'm so excited that you're joining me. If you are a fan of Dear Multi-Hyphenate, please rate, subscribe, comment, share, do all of that good stuff. Especially on Apple Podcasts, please write a review. It really, really helps. And thank you to Broadway Podcast Network for giving me the space to share these stories. A little update. I'm really excited because in the fall I'm going to be joining the teaching staff at Strasberg, the Lee Strasberg Institute, and I will be teaching the NYU students, the NYU performance students, theater business, and we'll be teaching out of my book once it's published. I'm very excited about it. So I wanted to share that little bit of information. I'll share more as I know more, but I'm just really excited to join the Strasberg and NYU family. I've always wanted to be, I really love Egyptology, and when I watch documentaries on Egyptology, they always interview the people that are doing the excavations, and they always are professors at Harvard or Yale or something like that. And I'm always like, that's so cool that they have these like home teaching bases at these universities, and then they go off and do all of this field work. I'm like, I want that. I want to have a home base, and I feel like I'm finding one, which is really kind of cool. So, Strasberg fall, woo! There's also a lot of stuff going on TikTok regarding the industry, specifically auditions and what to post regarding auditions, and there's just a lot of misinformation going on, and there's a lot of like intention that it is not directed in the best way in terms of sharing. I just want to say this. When you're sharing on social media, when it comes to the industry, make sure it's true. Make sure it's affecting your audience in a positive way. And be kind. Like, there's a lot of, I get it, we all need to boost our own egos once in a while. But is sharing your self-tapes the way to do it? Your self-tape bloopers or, sort of sharing that you got a callback for a project? Like, what is the purpose of that, sharing that you have a callback? I'm not a fan of sharing that sort of process in social media. I'm sort of one of those people that's like, when it's final, share it. When the contract is signed, share it. Because, you have to remember that process becomes product when you share it on social media. And sometimes our process is very private and should be private. So I just want to, if you're listening to this and you post a lot on social media, just, maybe you can keep some of your process to yourself, and maybe you could take stock of how that helps your artistry. But if that's, part of your brand, posting your process, then by all means, go for it. But I'm just saying, who are you trying to affect? Who are you trying to get to listen? And who are you helping? That's all. I'm really excited for this episode. I have Robbie Roselle, performer, director, writer, graphic designer, and record producer. I mean, Robbie is such a wonderful cabaret cultivator, and his concerts sell out in literally 26 minutes. He's amazing. He has infiltrated the industry in such an interesting way. He's directed and written sold out cabarets for Tony Award nominees like Melissa Errico and Kate Baldwin. Nika Graf-Lanzarone, Miss Kasha Davis from... I do hear my puppy snoring in the background. Miss Kasha Davis from RuPaul's Drag Race. He has multiple CDs. He was the creative director at Playbill, and he also runs Ghostlight Design. I mean, talk about a multi-hyphenate. He's amazing. And I'm really excited for you to listen to what he says. I think it's a great conversation. So as a reminder, please rate, comment, subscribe, do all that good stuff, and enjoy.
Hi, Robbie Roselle.
Michael Kushner, how are you?
We've been trying to do this for a long time.
You asked me to be the next guest back in January.
Oh God, life does happen, right? And of course, the one day that we record, Roe v. Wade is overturned just the morning of...
What a nightmare. Like, honestly, and you actually asked me, should we postpone? And I said, no, because I think that we should talk about ways that we can use our social platforms and stuff like that, because we have followings and ways to uplift. So that's why I said, no, let's keep going.
I think the interesting thing about, you know, and I write this in my upcoming book, is like, you know, we have to constantly pivot because of the shit that is being thrown at us in the world. And it's like, you know, you are a very sought out after cabaret and concert performer, and you're the Marilyn May of our generation. And what if you had a show tonight? Like, you don't cancel the show, but you have to acknowledge
what is happening.
What is happening?
If you recall, was it four years ago, you shot my show at Fine Signs 54 Below, which was the Pride show, which was after also a very dark SCOTUS ruling about the baker and the wedding cakes. And in the show, I sang No More from Into the Woods. And the day of the band rehearsal. So when you do cabaret, you have a band sometimes, and sometimes you have to pay them. and I have a very good band. But when we had our band rehearsal, that Monday was the day that we found out about the children in cages. And the last three lines of No More are all the children, all the giants, no more. And I had a full nervous breakdown in Michiko Studios, just sweeping uncontrollably, but kept that song because we have to shine a light on truth, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why.
We do. And it's so interesting. I was just talking with Ari Axelrod live on Instagram yesterday, and he popped in at the end, and he brought up this really interesting point about how a cabaret of his literally saved someone's life. And she had chemotherapy and went to her favorite diner and was gonna have one last of her favorite diner meals in her spot, and then was gonna go home and end it because she couldn't fight anymore. But she was sat next to Ari, who said, "Hey, what are you doing tonight? You should come to my show." And then she actually wound up going to the show. And she said afterwards and was like, "I'm not supposed to be here." And he was like, "Oh, well, yeah, I'm so glad that you came." And she's like, no, I'm not supposed to be here. And I have decided to keep fighting because of your show. And now the woman is in remission. And I was just like, you know, without patting ourselves on the back, what we get to do it really does matter. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, I think something that you and I connect on is like divas, is women in theater. And why I get so excited when I get to photograph those women in this studio is because they saved me from bullying. They helped me figure out who I am. When I was being bullied in middle school, all I did was turn on that cast album and I had a friend. So when those same women come into my studio and I make sure I take care of them because they took care of me.
Yeah, I did a whole album around that. You know,
it's just care to let's talk about your album. Which album is this?
Songs from Inside My Locker, live at Feinstein's 54 Below.
So you have a really interesting in the industry. You know, I'm a friend of yours. You're a friend of mine. So you didn't start out as a performer.
I certainly didn't. I mean, sure, yes, in the sense of like community theater, right?
Right, right.
Which is a whole different thing. But moving to the city, I was never going to be, I wasn't chasing my my Mark and Rent dreams anymore.
What was the plan?
To exist, truly, like to stay alive.
Yeah.
Usually on Chipotle because it was cheaper then.
Yes, it was.
True. Guacamole has really kicked up.
Guacamole is very expensive.
Who are you telling? So I moved here. I was running a hotel in the Poconos, and
truly, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I've lived multi lives. Truly, like
multi lives,
old lady.
Multi lives for this multi hyphenate,
right? I mean, I was working kind of in show business because I was working for a record label at the time called PS Classics. I was an assistant to a brilliant record producer named Tommy Krasker, and his partner Philip Chafin, and a lot of it was just like proofreading CD books and sometimes laying them out and things like that and freelancing. But my main gig was running a Hampton Inn. And let me tell you, there's nothing worse in the world than vacationing people in the Poconos on weekends when there are blizzards.
Yeah,
truly. And you know, the minute you put on a name tag, you cease to be a human being. You are just a robot to bring towels. I did that for 5 years. Turns out I don't like people, but specifically like vacationing people. I love people. And certainly, you know, I'm trying to fight for people every day of my existence. Mm-hmm. But I moved here because I was about to turn 35. And I was on vacation, my like week vacation from my garbage job. And my apartment lease was ending, and they were gonna demolish the building. So it's like, now or never, you know what I mean? Now or never, get off the pot. Let's do this.
Yeah.
So I turned to my now husband and I said, "Here's the deal. We lose this place, and I think we should look at New York, because I don't want to be a what if."
Mm-hmm.
So
and you wonder what if
but you are wearing glasses, so are you Liz or are you Beth? Oop.
Beth.
Wait, Liz, where'd you go?
Liz.
Oh, hey, are you here to play in a city?
Hey, it's me.
That's a very niche if then joke for the listeners who are very confused.
Yes.
As I was watching the show. So I moved here without a job. My husband stayed back in Pennsylvania, working as a therapist for another 2.5 years while I found a place here, found a job at Playbill as a digital scanner. My job was scanning pages of Playbills for the Playbill Vault for $10 an hour. And when I got hired, the person who hired me said, We think you have too much experience for this, and you will probably leave before you finish. And I said, maybe you'll find other things for me to do. Mm-hmm. 3 months later, I became essentially the creative director of Playbill. I was there for 3.5 years. And in that time, I started working with people creating cabaret acts as just like an artistic outlet, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because I love theater music. Theater music saved my life. And what better way to give back than to turn to give jokes to Melissa Errico and Kate Baldwin? You know, like sopranos need jokes. And I know how to do that.
Yeah. Yes. Sopranos need jokes. Please, uh-huh. if you want to donate, call 1-800 Sopranos Need Jokes.
Jokes for, it's the number four.
Yeah. Jokes sops. For sops.
Yeah. Anyway, and every time I would do like a gig at 54, which was like my artistic home for many years, the staff there would say to me, oh my God, you're so funny. You should really do your own thing. And I said to
you're
them,
brilliant. You look like Linda Evangelista.
You're a model. I was like, nobody's coming to that. Nobody wants to hear the re-gift. Listener, I pointed to my throat, the re-gift.
What do you call yourself?
I'm a Charles Nelson Reilly with a Paul Lynde Rising. I'm a personality.
The other one is the best one, though. You're Broadway adjacent.
Oh, yeah. I am fully Broadway adjacent. My like favorite. Barely. I am equity adjacent.
Those jokes, those are my favorite ones because they're so niche, but they're so specific and honest.
Very true. I believe in honesty, like a heightened honesty at times when I perform, but like it's everything I'm saying is very truthful and it comes from a very real place.
And so the best comedy comes from a place of darkness, awareness, really. Darkness and awareness. Lost in the darkness. This is okay. Now we have Jekyll and Hyde. Shirley Bassey. Oh,
which I've done in shows. So
you've done
one of the world's worst community theater production of Jekyll and Hyde ever.
Jekyll and Hyde, exclamation point.
Uh-huh. Or as we call it in the biz, Jekyll.
Jekyll.
Don't you hate people who one word shows?
I know. I love him because I am one.
Oh, God. But you know, sometimes I live in Astoria and I'll have to take the train and I'm always stuck behind like two just got back from out of town actors who are like, oh, you know, I just did West Side at Cap Rep and I just put a cigarette out in my eye. It would be easier.
you prefer West Side Story,
name of the show. Now, am I gonna shorten a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum? Probably.
Forum.
I get abbreves, but
right.
It's just something like, are you saying deed instead of candy? That's the question I'm just curious about.
That's funny. You can't say more for a more.
No, I mean I could, but nobody would know what the hell I was talking about.
We also don't even say a more.
No. I saw it though.
You did?
Yeah. Melissa Errico and I worked together a lot and we went over to London and it was making its European debut over there at an off West End theater. And so the night before we did our show, we went and saw more.
I sang a song from it in college. I remember it was,
were you the painting song?
Chris Fitzgerald song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I thought maybe the Norm Lewis-y song because like you can't pull a lot of those songs out of the score.
No, there's a Chris Fitzgerald song in it that was like, because like in college, like we were sort of going for the young Chris Fitzgerald type sure. thing. Mm-hmm. Then I quickly realized that wasn't for me. Love his work. It's, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's I'm mm-hmm. much Jewier. You know, we've had this conversation a million times.
What? You? Weird.
Okay. Gayer and Jewier. And I think, you know, Chris Fitzgerald was a really great, like, straight option for me to look at. And sure. I think a lot of the faculty wanted me to, like, be straighter, be more mature, you know, be more chill, things like that. No, just kidding. How many musical theater references can we throw into this one?
I'm really hoping that your listeners are drinking every time we do, because I would like to put some people into comas.
Sounds good. If you're great. Listening, start the episode over.
Mm-hmm. Go back. Listen go back. To the dulcet tones of us again.
The dulcet tones. The dulcinea tones of...
Oh!
Oh!
That's another one.
That's another one.
I can't.
they're going to black out by, you know, 16 Dulcinea, minutes in.
Honestly,
they're going to black out by Dulcinea. They're going to like I blacked out at your show.
Whoops. I mean,
remember that? I don't.
At the when I had the residency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what a good night.
I
what I remember most is you looking at me very intently and just saying, "Do you love me?" Repeat, like, over and over. And listener, we're still here, so clearly the answer is yes.
Do you love me?
It was a little dark.
Do I love you? Do I love you? There's another one.
Truly, I was like, am I supposed to be Golda, or who am I in this situation?
Oh,
you know,
who am I? 24601.
I can't.
Everyone's blacked out.
They're like, done. Please turn it off. Go enjoy. I don't know, whatever other podcast you're listening to. Go donate to an abortion fund.
Yes, true. So go back. So to be back on the, you know, to get back on the track.
All right. 54, everybody, they were always like, do you want to do something? And I was always, no. I put it on Facebook because people still use Facebook.
Yes.
And I said, you know, if hypothetically I did a thing, would you hypothetically come to the thing? And an hour later, I had a date and a contract. So I had to do a thing. And that's what begat this sort of second career.
I think people are really confused as to like how to book a cabaret and concert. And when I was at Green Room, I never really talked about it on my podcast because it wasn't the focus. Like this podcast isn't the focus of like, you know, cabaret and concert. It's sort of like, mm-hmm. It's the multi-hyphenate. But like, how do you personally get your dates? How do you get asked to do something in London? Like what you just did? Like That's a
great question. For me, I am very much a self-starter, and doing what I feel is important to me, as like a human and a performer second. So, if I want to do something, I sort of will it into existence, and a lot of that is a lot of cold emails.
Yes.
There's so many cold emails that I'll send out. Hi, I am a cabaret, beloved, fully ignored cabaret sensation, Robbie Roselle. I have an album. Like, you know, I'll send the album and I'll say, here's the pitch, blah, blah, blah. 9 times out of 10, I will never get an email back. I can't book P-Town if I was trying to get it pregnant.
Really?
Truly. I cannot to save my life. And I would like to play there because gays enjoy me and I enjoy gays being one. So like,
you're gay?
That just makes sense. I can't book LA or San Francisco. Like anywhere where my people are, can't book them. London, I was able to book. I sent a cold email. I got they said, we're doing an American in London series. Absolutely. Come on over. And that's how that happened. It was a cold email. But on the flip side of that, now in New York, I get asked to do shows. I don't ask anymore. I did 54 for a very long time. And I was one of the people who reopened the club. Mm-hmm. I was the first show.
The two of us were.
Reopening the club. And then right out of that began a relationship with Birdland. Mm-hmm. And then you, when you were at Green Room, asked me to do some shows that have yet to come to fruition. But we'll see.
Yeah. I think listeners are afraid of cold emails. And something that I'm excited about in my book coming up is I teach you how to write a good cold email.
Right.
It's literally like I break it down and I give you options, basically things for you to copy and paste as to what makes a really successful email if you are scared of cold calling and cold emailing. And pretty much like what I like to say is something that if you really don't like cold emailing, do a one sheet, make a one sheet with all of that information.
Mm-hmm.
And make it a PDF, and it's literally the who, what, where, when, how, and why of what you're doing. And literally all you have to do in that email is be like, hi, more information is attached, yada, yada, yada.
Would love to play your clip.
Yes. And make it, you know, what I say about everything in the art world is we have to make it about the other. It's not about us. Why do you want to be a part of that club? Why do you feel like this specific story fits in your space? Why, you know what I mean? In my last performance, I sold out in, what did you say? You sold out in what?
26 minutes.
You sold out in 26 minutes. That is something that you would lead with in an email, right? Yep. Like,
and you know, it's a lot of like, list your social stats and things like that, which is terrible. I hate it personally.
Well,
I have a following, but I also feel like that gets, it starts to sound like you should have me because people follow me on a social platform.
When do you think Broadway is going to realize that social media stats don't equal ticket sales?
I don't know that they ever will be. You would think Mean Girls, et cetera, would have been like a good example of that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't know specifically because I feel like the pandemic sort of broke things up. And so there are a lot of lessons that have not been learned the way they would have been.
I think social media certainly helps, like with influencer, sure, with influencer packages, you know, getting the unboxing things. Like I had one from Annie Live. Like those are so fun to do.
Yeah, I got one.
And it gets people to watch and it gets people, you know, to interact. That's very fun. I think Colleen Ballinger, super successful in that casting of Waitress. You know what I mean?
Makes sense.
And such a multi-hyphenate in terms of creating this character and it becoming a TV show, being a writer, a producer.
Has the skills to back up.
And is musical theater trained.
Correct.
So she was incredible. But we see, and I think we've always seen this in Broadway, you know, 10 years ago, it wasn't social media stats. It was daytime TV. And it was, you know what I mean? It was, sure, it was things like that. But I really do feel like we are sort of stuck in this world of the more social media followers you have. Like I've seen so many regional theater productions where on stage, there are people that have millions of followers and that sold is, and that house is less than half sold.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering when we're going to put, you know, when we're going to feel the pressure off of ourselves to.
I mean, I would hope soon. I don't really go for I don't audition for Broadway shows or anything anymore, because I know that I'm a very specific type and don't fit that mold.
I think you and I are very specific in what we can and want to do on stage.
And what I think like we bring to the table, right? Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And because like 9 or 10 years ago, I was filming an interview for a friend of mine who does a lot of on-camera stuff, and he was interviewing Jen Maxwell, who, RIP, missed her so much. But
so glad I got to see her do Polly's.
Right? Yeah. Oh, she should have won a Tony. A lot of people should have won a Tony in that production.
Yeah.
Danny Burstein should have several Tonys. Anyway. But
yes.
But specifically for Volleys, he was brilliant. Anyway, Jan Maxwell, the interviewer asked that sort of like question, what advice do you have for younger people? You know, the same, it's sort of like a question that gets asked over and over. And Jan Maxwell looked straight into the camera and through the eye of the camera into my soul and said, you have to make your own work. You have to choose yourself and other people will choose you. And that's specifically when I started doing cabaret work. And she's so right.
And she's so right.
Yeah.
You have to choose yourself and other people will choose you. Mm-hmm. That's the whole foundation of multi-hyphenate work. Yep. It's, you know what I mean? It's like, there are people that they go to Michigan and CCM and Ithaca and all of those programs and they graduate and they become Broadway stars. Cool. Yep. But the pool is so small. The there's so much waiting. There's so much, and chances are the reason why we find young, when we see young people being successful, is because they are taking the chance mm-hmm. and getting their own stuff out there.
Yeah. And now when all you need is an iPhone and a YouTube account, you can literally do anything.
You can literally do anything.
But I'm 45. I could not always, you know?
Right. I mean, look. You
can't really film me on a landline.
I think you'd be surprised. you'd be surprised. There's another reference right there. Madeline Kahn singing that song.
Oh, I sang it.
You did?
Yeah. When I reopened Birdland, or when I reopened 54, it was the third song in.
You did some really great songs in your recent Birdland show.
I always hunt for like comic stuff that I'm singing every day.
Me too. I mean, here's the joy of, I don't know if I've told this story on my podcast yet, but here's the joy of what cabaret and concert can lead you to. It's like, you know, when I've always been so fascinated and in love with Madeline Kahn. Mm-hmm. And you know, I want her career. I still do, you know, Mel Brooks and Madeline's. Sure. And when I was moving to the city, my mom's boyfriend was like, you know, when you go to the city, I have some people there that you can meet. And I basically was like, whatever. So in order to make my mom happy, I added like the first person that he told me. And so I did. And then a few years later, go by, Remy, my fiance, and I meet, and we're having like a cute little snow day date. And we're watching the Carol Channing documentary, Larger Than Life, highly mm-hmm. recommend. And there's one old VHS snippet of her singing a song. She literally goes, "Anyone who's anyone is Jewish." And I was like, I want that song. That has to be my song. So I waited the credits. There was no information. So I Googled Carol Channing documentary, Larger Than Life bibliography. And up came this PDF that had all of the songs in it. And it said, "Anyone who's anyone is Jewish, music and lyrics by Bill Whedon." And I went, "Bill Whedon? Why do I know that name?" And I was like, "I'm Facebook friends with him. Why am I?" It was the guy that Adam told me to add. So I messaged him, and he had a copy in his attic that he photo scanned for me, just like you at Playbill. Mm-hmm. And he goes, "Michael, I'm so excited that you want this song. The only three people that have sung this before you is Betty Aberlin, Carol Channing, and Madeline Kahn."
Well, I mean, where do you go from there?
So that's the magic of cabaret and concert, though. You know, it's like you get to tell those specific stories and sing those songs that are for you. It's like, yeah, you could sing things from Waitress. That's cool. But why don't you find the things that really mirror your experience and your life and who you are?
Yeah. I mean, the storytelling of it, and I'm not interested in like the cabaret trope of I wanted to be an actress and so I moved to New York and my right. boyfriend broke up with me and now I'm going to sing for you. Times like this.
No, my pride show was based on what does pride mean to me? And mm-hmm. my gayness would be nothing without my Judaism. And my right. Judaism would be nothing without my gayness. So I incorporated this very niche specific point of view of Judaism and gayness in Judaism. And that was my pride story. And I think it was a really successful night. Look, are people talking about it to this day? No. Am I talking about it to this day? Well, in this instant, yes.
Absolutely.
But it served a purpose for that moment. You know, and that's what cabaret and concert does.
Storytelling.
Storytelling.
It's all storytelling, right?
That's exactly what it is. And we get to control, we get to control it. We get to be in charge of what happens on that stage. And I don't know if people are scared to go that far into
it. I don't know if they're scared per se. I know a lot of actors don't love being themselves. Mm-hmm. They love slipping into somebody else's skin.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds gross. I love being able to just walk out and talk, tell my jokes, things like that, and sing. If something's happening in the world, react to it in real time.
Yes. Speaking of.
I mean, we're doing it today. Today, I have a single that came out.
Because
mm-hmm. I was like, a new song just for Pride. Here's my jazz take of a Sesame Street love song. And then this, the SCOTUS ruling, stripping women of their rights, which is horrifying. And so you pivot, like, how can I talk about, like, my silly song when I have a very large platform where I'm able to uplift voices and amplify, which is, you know, what I was doing during the George Floyd protests and the Women's March and everything like that.
Yeah.
Because if you have a platform, and specifically if you are a white cis man, how are you not using your platform to amplify others?
I've been hearing people go, can't we just have things that are light and like, it doesn't have to be like, we could just create it and it doesn't have to be something with, you know, other meaning, something political. I'm like, no, I don't think so. I think if you actually move forward creating something in the spirit of, I moved to New York, my person broke up with me, and I'm going to sing about it. I think it is actually extremely self-focused and extremely in bad taste. I think that you have to, if you are going to take up that space, it has to deal with something worth talking about.
Yes.
Using that platform.
I always joke that if you're going to show hole on Instagram, it better have a link to Planned Parenthood or something.
Yeah.
You know, at least use it for good.
For good.
It is. And during the pandemic, I went through my Instagram specifically and was unfollowing a ton of people who just kept posting shirtless selfie after shirtless selfie when they weren't posting ways to make things better.
And what's so funny is, if you can post shirtless selfies, go for it. But like,
a call to action.
Have a call to action. Be like, got your attention?
Great.
You know what I mean? Donate to Planned Parenthood. Like, right. It's today, you know, in the morning, I wanted to post that, you know, my book is going into production, and I got the email that is going into production. And then 30 minutes later, you know, I saw the news notifications come in. I deleted the post because I don't want to take up space on social media. And like, when you're scrolling through, I don't want my photo to take up the space and have it be like, you know, what if the next picture is the one that has like the right number to call, the right, you know what I mean? So it's,
How do you think, how do you consume Instagram these days?
Oh, with a little ketchup and salt and pepper.
What I mean by that is, do you think people are looking at grids at all anymore? Or are they just clicking through stories absentmindedly?
Well, I have noticed that like my interaction on my grid posts are so down.
Yeah.
Like I have, you know, in this moment, I have 12,400 followers and none of them are bought. They're all organic.
Good.
They're, you know, some are for photography, some are for producing, some are for me being cute AF, you know, whatever, but like, they're all organic.
Yeah.
There's no reason why a photo of me with exciting information or a great photo I took or whatever gets 125 likes. I have 12,400 followers. So my interaction levels are so low. I have no idea why. And I'm not annoying on social media. Like I post every 3 or 4 days. Mm-hmm. I post casually maybe twice, 2 or 3 times on my story, and I comment and like on other people. So it's like, am I shadow banned? Is it like a...
Personally, that I am, because I definitely get very political in my stories. Mm-hmm. Because that's where people are consuming content, I feel.
Right.
Like. And it's not getting the, unless, you know, when I got COVID in London a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. suddenly that had 700 views. And I was like, wait a second, because nobody, I get truly like 100 if.
Right.
You know, and I realize that it's a numbers game and we're talking about a numbers game, but like how it just becomes a, how does this get, how are we consuming it and what can we do about that?
I don't know. I mean, like I post on TikTok and like for every 10 to 15 videos, one goes sort of viral, not very viral, but like, to the point of like, you know, I just did one of Randy Graff backstage of Mr. Saturday Night, and it got almost 23,000 views, which for me is good. And then other, like I have almost 8,000 followers on TikTok. It's not, I don't try hard on TikTok.
I don't try hard, period. So
yeah, but I have 8,000 followers on TikTok, which isn't a lot. But you think I would get more views than 350 views on a video. You know what I mean? It's like, because I literally have that built-in following, but I just, people don't see it. And that's very frustrating about social media sometimes, because I know that I, when I'm like really making a cute video, making one TikTok can take 45 minutes. It could take an hour. It could take longer than that. And for that, to put that in the world and have that be seen by 325 people, I mean, hopefully one of them is the right person. The right person needs to see it. But like, you know, it gets so disconcerting and just like discouraging. Just like, why am I trying so hard?
100%.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to bite into Nerds gummy clusters? They're fruity. They're tangy. They're gummy. And they're crunchy. Nerds Gummy Clusters, a union of fruity sweet gummy and tangy crunchy nerds. Unleash your senses. Shop now at nerdscandy.com.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations of Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
So what to you is, you know, we're talking a lot about cabaret and concert.
Mm-hmm.
What to you is a multi-hyphenate? Like,
so weird, because this is normally your first question.
Yeah, but the thing, what I love about having guests that I know on, that we have rapport on, is that you could just jump in and talk about something and then the episode becomes that. Mm-hmm. But I do like to touch base and go, what to you is a multi-hyphenate?
I think a multi-hyphenate is somebody who has ability to work in multiple facets and use those skills. For example, my day job, which you mentioned at the introduction, that's the greatest introduction of all time, is as the A&R director and a record producer and graphic designer for Broadway Records. Mm-hmm. And those are three wildly diverse skill sets. Mm-hmm. In addition to like cabaret work. So it's really somebody who has skill sets in multiple disciplines and is able to execute them to the fullest. That to me is what a multi-hyphenate is. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the term Renaissance man?
I think that there are a lot of different terms that apply to different things. Mm-hmm. Like Renaissance man or person, Renaissance person,
sure,
is interesting because it insinuates that you are building something from the ashes.
I see.
You know, the Renaissance came out of the Dark Ages. So like you know, oh, that that's a Renaissance man. That person just created something that is masterful. It's a work of art. It's, I think it insinuates like the multi-hyphenate, but to me, the multi-hyphenate means multi-hyphenate Renaissance person is like, they're innovative and they're creative and they're making something new. Same thing with someone being multifaceted, multi-talented, multi-this, multi-that. The multi-hyphenate word to me is so specific and of its own. It's because it is a literal thing. It is multi-hyphens. And what goes in between those hyphens but an artistic identity? So multi-talented, yeah, I could crochet, I could paint, I could roller skate, I could kibitz, I could do, I'm talented in every way.
Right.
That's not as specific. Multifaceted, it's the same thing. Multi-hyphenated means that I have specific parts of my personality that I call upon to tell a story, to get a point across.
It's like ribbons of a kite, right?
Let's go, you know.
I saw that while I was in London.
How was it?
Oh, incredible. Incredible. A friend of mine is playing, what is that? The statue, Neelius?
Neelius. Neelius, come down from that plinth. Something like that.
But like ribbons of a kite, like they all fly together in harmony. And how they fly in consort, sort of like, are your different skill sets coming together to create whatever you're making?
Yes, I think that's beautiful. I love it. Let's all make our own kite fly. And I think that's another, you know, I think that's actually a really beautiful image, because we're so interested in making our kites look like other people's kites. And we have to figure out how to keep our own
afloat
in the air. Like your multi-hyphenate identity is so you and so amazing. And like, you are creating this epic path for you that has to do with like the preservation of musical theater artistry. I think that when I look at you, that's like the undertone of it. Like, you focus on the preservation of musical theater artistry, whether or not you're performing in a cabaret setting, whether or not you're producing, whether or not you're writing, it all comes from this love and this respect of musical theater. And I love that about you. Do you agree? Do you disagree?
I do. What's really fascinating to me as I think about sort of my show business careers is every job that I've had has been me go, hi, I would like to do this. That's same. My job at Broadway Records. My position did not exist before me. It was built for me. When I was at Playbill, what I was hired for existed, but what I ended up doing did not exist. It was built for me. Every sort of thing I do, it's literally me knocking on doors and saying, hey girl, what's good? I would love to do it. And people going, sure, we will give you small amounts of money so that you can do it.
Michael Kushner Photography did not exist before I created it. I mean, other photographies exist, but my specific one didn't. Dear Multi-Hyphenate did not exist before me.
And the dressing room project.
Dressing room project did not exist before. We are in this industry that is so made up. It's so made up. And like, that's the exciting thing, is that it's built on the principles of telling stories. What story do you have to tell? And figure out the ways in which to tell them. Like, you want to be a performer, you want to be Elphaba, that is amazing. But what are you going to do in that time that you are waiting for, for that debut, which will happen, but you're just going to sit and collect dust? Like,
No, you just keep knocking and choosing yourself and making your own projects.
I love it. I love it. And so what's coming up for you, babe? What's the call to action here? How can we get behind Robbie Rozelle and drink the Kool-Aid?
Well, first you can find an abortion fund and donate to it because they need us far more than I need you. Then you can just, honestly, the best thing that you can do for queer creators, is give them a follow on Spotify so that when new things show up, it's there, you know, like, or give them a follow on Instagram, like their content, share their content, whether it's me or literally anybody else. The more that you're sharing and uplifting other people, the more that work is being found.
I just feel like that is such a great lesson, because I think that there's so much contention in the rat race that just because your win, just because you're having a win, does not mean I'm having a loss.
Correct.
I can celebrate you. And if that celebration means giving you a follow, fine, I'll do it.
Like, how are we lifting up other people? Because honestly, a rising tides lift all boats, right?
Right. Yes, exactly.
And so truly part of my identity is lifting up the people I love and their work. It's very important to me at all times, and celebrating their wins, because in this industry, a lot of times it's not just I have to win. It's that you have to fail.
Yeah.
And I have no interest in that.
None. You know, Ari Axelrod and I were talking yesterday on Instagram. And love him too. And, you know, we were talking about publicly shaming other people in the industry.
Yeah.
There's so much of that. There's so much public shaming of what we saw with Funny Girl, right? Like, I've seen Facebook friends of mine go and just destroy multiple things in this Broadway community, different shows, different performances, people on TikTok just going as if they know the industry. And it breaks my heart, because I'm like, do you know that that video is like, but like, is probably going to get seen by this person? And like, you are single-handedly like hurting someone.
Right.
Why do we do that?
Why? Now, there's certainly a difference from like a light snark. Back in the day of like live tweeting the Tony Awards, right? There's this now like lean in, and how can we be meaner?
Meaner. And I'm just being honest. No one asked for your fucking opinion.
Are you just being honest is the question, because what it seems like is you are punching down.
Definitely. There's a difference between reading and being in on the joke and roasting someone.
Yes.
And like, all for the sake of being like, oh my God, that's a funny joke. Like, did you see the, video of the guy like being like, do you support LGBTQ or LGBT? And it was like, and he was like, do I support Leah getting beanie to quit? That's what it was. Leah, I was like, that is so brilliant and funny. That's a forbidden Broadway joke. That's, you know, that's punching up. That's going like that. To me, that's celebration and going like, you know, but by literally being like, you suck, you're awful, never have a like blah blah. Who asked you? Why are you doing? Go to therapy.
Truly, truly, just make your work.
Make your work. If you don't like what you're seeing, if you don't like that performance, make something so undeniable that we have no chance but to produce your show.
Right. Make your work.
Make your work, baby. Make your work. Chase that dream and be nice.
That's right. That's all we want.
Robbie Rizzell, I love you so much.
I adore you. I'm so grateful to you for having me.
This is such a great conversation. And my favorite conversations are the ones where we can just sort of kibitz and, you know, shoot the shit and make each other laugh. And you always make me laugh.
Find real truths among them.
Exactly. Love you so much.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.